This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode 113 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside Brooklyn Jackson for this special post-Texas pre-Talladega edition of our show. Yes, it's the tease on NASCAR's favorite podcast. Well, there's many favorite podcasts of NASCAR's, but I would hope they like this one as well, because we do things real, as we like to be proud about, because we're going to look back at the craziness that was Texas, because none of those three races were boring. We saw Chevrolet win all three races, but it wasn't the easy path for all three drivers who won, especially for the driver who won the Xfinity Series race on Saturday. And oh, by the way, a certain co-host of this show has been believing in a certain driver to breaking their long winless streak, and their faith was rewarded pretty recently. And I know she's excited to talk about that. So we'll hear from Brooklyn, of course, about the victory by Chase Elliott on Sunday at Texas, in which he snapped his 42 race winless streak. My goodness, you guys can breathe again. He finally won a race. And to answer Bob Pockris's question, yes, he's been back. I mean, he's been back since last year. So I don't know. Anyways, for all the Elliott fans, and also for people who've been hating on Elliott, I'll still say, and we'll be talking a lot about Sam Mayer's victory, which was the closest in NASCAR Xfinity Series history at Texas Motor Speedway, and evoked feelings of the 2004 Cup Series finish between Elliott Sadler and Casey Kane, and also the wrecks that happened at Texas, because we can't talk about racing at Texas without wrecks. And the Stuart Haas boys, they're on a momentum swing right now, let's say, towards the better. And then, of course, you're also here to hear our picks for Talladega and our always fun hot seat segment, which this week features Legacy Motor Club's Eric Jones. I'm holding this card if I release the podcast version on video. And please don't hate on me for my backdrop for this background for this week. It's just funny. I don't know. I'm just having fun. It's April. It's been a crazy month for everybody. So let's have a little fun here and just, I don't know, be a little dorky about things. But anyways, before we get started on racing talk and then getting all to the fun and greedy talk that we normally do, let's go bring in Brooklyn right now and hear from her. So Brooklyn, I know you're getting ready for Talladega. I know you've got a lot going on in your plate, but how are you doing so far this week?
I'm good. I am honestly still, you know, I'm still in awe of all three Texas races this weekend. Like you said, all three of them definitely delivered. They were all three very interesting races in their own ways.
And I will say, for fans who always doubt Texas Motor Speedway, I hope you take it back, fans, because we actually saw three good races. And I will say, not just for Texas Motor Speedway standards, I would say for NASCAR standards all around. So y'all get off Texas Motor Speedway's back. I'm talking about you, Denny Hamlin. And please stop arguing with Marcus Smith, because we kind of need Texas on the circuit right now. So I'm just saying, let's get off the high horse about dissing on SMI, because those are mostly the tracks I go to anyways, every year it seems. No, I'm not paid by SMI. I'm just letting people know. But anyone who hates Texas Motor Speedway, I'll say the young people's thoughts. Be gone, thought! Anyways, let's go hear from our presenting sponsors, who I hope are still sponsoring us after I said that. That would be SpoilerDiecast.com. Hey there, racing fans. Are you on the lookout for the latest NASCAR, IndyCar, or F1 diecasts in the market? Well, look no further than SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest and fastest shipping in the industry. And did you know, if you use code TPF on orders of $20 or more, you'll get free shipping and 5% off of your orders. And that's really easy money to save. So head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com and use code TPF to get 5% off of your orders of $20 or more. And if you happen to be in the area in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Spoiler Diecast is now open for business at their storefront location at 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E, Fort Wayne, Indiana. SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest in diecast collectibles. We'll see you in the fast lane. And SpoilerDieCast.com has all the latest and greatest in diecast offerings from Lionel Racing, Greenlight Collectibles, and of course, if you're into F1, which if you are, good on you, go ahead and support Evan and his team by using promo code TPF. Get 5% off your orders of $20 or more and free shipping. Hey, hey, hey. Now with that, folks, I do think it's time for us to go into Podium Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDieCast.com. Now, I know this is a topic that Brooklyn's been dying to talk about since she joined the podcast last year, so I finally get to talk about it at last. Chase Elliott won a race, okay? That's it. That's all we're going to talk about. End of the show. No, not really.
Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye, everybody. Good to know. Yeah, we're done. We're off the air. We're switching over to different sports. No, we're still here, folks. Chase, of course, had been mired in a long 42-race winless streak that dated back to October of 2022 when he won the Yellowwood 500 at Talladega Super Speedway during that incredible championship four season that he had. Unfortunately, things weren't so good the last year, about a year and a half, but it's not because of performance issues. You have to remember that Elliott was overcoming an injury that he sustained over in Colorado from that snowboarding incident. It takes a while for a driver of Elliott's caliber to come back from such a dire situation, but he did. And it took a while for him to find his groove with the next-gen car, but he has. And much to the chagrin of a certain journalist, I think Elliott's always been back. It's just NASCAR is so competitive. The margin for error is so close that even a driver like Kyle Larson, if he's going to be in a rut, he doesn't have that opportunity to make up ground like he would in the Gen 6 era. So Elliott, in my opinion, has always been around. He's never lost what he's lost. And honestly, Hendrick can reaffirm themselves as having four number one race car drivers in their roster. That's pretty scary, if you ask me. It's kind of like South Carolina's undefeated team in NCAA women's basketball. That's how I'll put it. Like, Coach Don Staley had pretty much a number one player in every position. Sorry, Caitlin Clark in Iowa. Don't hate me. Don't hate me. But I'm just speaking truth. Anyways, let's go bring in Brooklyn on this thought, because I know she's dying to talk about it. So I've said my piece about Elliott's victory. But, you know, what can we expect from Chase here on out? And we knew he's been back. So what's with people, like, saying, where has he been? What's going on with Chase?
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think he's never truly been, I haven't been as worried about him as I think some people have maybe been. Ultimately, when he had the time out of the car for the injury, right? And that was, everybody had the first whole season with the next gen car. That was kind of still an even playing field. But then he missed a large chunk of time that other people had to figure out the next gen car. To kind of just continue figuring stuff out, working on stuff, getting momentum, building notebooks, that kind of thing. That not only was he having to come back from an injury on top of that. So, yeah, he's going to have some more stuff to deal with hindsight. But as soon as he came back, he was, I don't want to say overperforming, but he had just broken his leg and been out for six races, and he was already getting top tens. I mean, and so he wasn't winning races, no. But that doesn't mean he wasn't fast very quickly after he came back. And he's never stopped being in the top. I mean, he's fourth in points right now. He's gotten, I loved what Alan said about, he listed out, he quoted that statistic. He was like, he's fourth in points. He's done this. He had Chase's resume of everything he's done since he got back. And it's he said, "What am I missing that he's not doing?" I mean, I completely agree and love that Allen had his back that much. I mean, yes, I mean, I can't deny that the only, I mean, he was missing a victory lane. He was missing a trip to victory lane, which I think is what raises people's eyebrows for Chase and the 9 team. We are used to seeing them in victory lane. We are used to seeing them contending for the lead and leading laps every week. I mean, mostly, if not every week, every 2 or 3 weeks minimum. We're used to hearing noise from them. And it's not that it's been radio silent, but it's been more quiet than we're used to. That doesn't mean that he's not still fast and an incredibly good driver. He was still outperforming some people broken, not at 100%. I think a lot of people need to sit with that.
And the fact remains that if it wasn't for a few bad breaks last year, like Watkins Glen running out of gas, or Indianapolis when he ran out of time, he probably would have had 2 victories, would have made the playoffs, and probably would have been a threat during the playoffs itself because he had the pace throughout the final 10 races of last year. So it wasn't like, oh, he's just
Right. I
figuring out
love
his
that.
bearings.
Yeah, I love that you brought up Watkins Glen. I mean, some of these things were not even in his control, like you mentioned. It, by himself, by his own speed, he probably would have had a win. But this is not an individual sport. This is a team sport. And you're having to put together a whole day as a team. Good pit stops, good calls from Allen, good driving from Chase. It has to all come together. And I mean, it just didn't for them. It took them a minute to get their momentum and good juju back.
And now that they've got that good juju back and being fourth in points, they're honestly in a pretty good position in terms of the playoff grid, because if we're looking at that, Hendrick Motorsports occupies 3 of the top 4 spots in the playoff grid. That's a great problem for Mr. H to have, because of course you got William Byron up there, you've got Kyle up there, you've got Chase not too far up there. Yeah, everything's looking good as far as HMS is concerned in their Ruby anniversary season, and having your popular driver doing well again and winning a race obviously helps the sport out quite a bit, because, well, ratings wise for a Texas race, it was not bad. They didn't have to compete against college basketball this time because now we're on our own. Although we had the Masters, but on for cable broadcasted race, it fared pretty well, and I think the Chase Elliott effect came into play. We're talking about that in women's basketball, which, anyone following the WNBA draft knows that there were millions of people watching the draft. One of them's me, of course. I'll admit, no, I didn't really watch a lot of women's basketball until Caitlin Clark. And I'm like, man, she's really good. And now I'm like actually following her from college to professional sports, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. It's crazy to see how one athlete and team can really, or one athlete in this case, can really sway the momentum of viewership and engagement for a sport. And Chase is kind of that person. We've been asking for that moment for Chase to happen in terms of, hey, you're Mr. Popular of NASCAR, but we kind of need something from you to happen. And now he's got that victory that, he's definitely going to be in the playoffs. And I don't think this is going to be his only victory of the season. In fact, we're going to Talladega. He's won here before. So I think we can't sit on Chase Elliott and go, oh, that's it. That was only one race. He got lucky because of the fact that, so many contenders wrecked out in turns, what, 2 and 4 over the weekend. I don't think you can say that. Chase is a 2-time Talladega race winner. So I'm actually kind of leaning towards him in our picks when we get to winning time a little bit later. So when you have a crew chief as passionate as Alan Gustafson backing you up, saying, hey, this is what's really going on. This is what's really going on. So Sometimes we journalists don't know everything. I don't mean us, but certain journalists don't know everything. I'm going to leave it right there and not get dissed at because I'm trying to be nice. Now, let's talk about the wrecks at Texas, because that it wasn't like 1997, 1998 levels, but there were a high amount of incidents, not because of the track being in poor shape, but because drivers made mistakes. Yeah. Jimmy Johnson spun out. Alex Bowman spun out and got wrecked into by John Hunter Nemechek. Of course, Josh Berry wrecked. Ryan Blaney wrecked. Kyle Larson kind of wrecked because of Zane Smith hitting him. Nobody was pretty much spared from the wrath of Texas Motor Speedway in the Cup race. And then the Xfinity race, you know, same situation there. And in the truck race, it was the carnage, the carnage 250, if you ask me. But ultimately, I thought they were three good races, but the wrecks, oh boy, you know, from your perspective, Brooklyn, what are your thoughts on Texas Motor Speedway in terms of challenging drivers? Was it a good kind of challenge, or was it a, oh, I hate word problems, why am I learning this in high school type of problems? Challenging.
I feel like, as a whole, these were good challenges. I mean, a lot of the challenge with wrecks for me, I mean, obviously, if you get damage that is not from you wrecking, if you get damage from somebody wrecking into you, that's not your fault. But if you are just, if it's just a caution and you're not involved in any way, I mean, restarts are challenges. It's a challenge avoiding a caution. Some people are good at restarts. Some people maybe aren't as good on a restart. So I feel like anytime you have cautions and restarts and people moving around, that's a good challenge.
And the fact remains that you have to have some constant variety in NASCAR with restarts, with green flag racing. You don't want to have Atlanta Motor Speedway every weekend. We don't want to have Charlotte Motor Speedway every weekend. And as much as I love Kansas, if we had Kansas all the time, it neuters what makes it so funny, unique in May and in September. So Texas having one race weekend date, which is a blasphemy if you ask me. Yes, I'm going to go down on that hill. I think we're starting to appreciate what it brings to the table in terms of motorsports, because IndyCar fans are not going to have it this year and may not even have it next year, which is a real shame if you ask me, because this facility is great. Does it need some upgrades? Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course. But in terms of the on-track product, hell, you know what? I don't care if the media center is from 1997. I'm down with 1997. I like 1997. I just care that the racing's good, that I can cover a race that will be entertaining for the fans, and the drivers have different perspectives and not are always thinking, oh, this is so great, I love it. Because when they're often saying, I love the racing, that's typically when the fans and, you know, even us journalists may lose, because we're often going to criticize that race. So the fact that they're uncomfortable is good. I don't want it to be too dangerous, but it's like, this is what reminds people that racing is not just an ordinary weekend drive. This is a dangerous sport in terms of trying to pick and choose your battles. Do you want to be in the high groove when everyone else is on the bottom groove? Are you trying to watch out for that slick spot that you couldn't see on the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, but you could see in the Xfinity and Cup car? Like, those are fun things. And I love the strategy too. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see it full out because of the cautions, but I love the differing strategies in stages 2 and 3. Where it looked like you're like, oh, wait a second. Hey, this might work out for Bubba Wallace. Oh, it's not going to work out for him. Oh, wait, it's going to work out for him. Oh, now he's 27. Oh, wait, he's back in. He got a top 10. How about that? So those were some cool things I love about Texas. And certainly I hope we see this more and more as this track is back on the circuit for the next several years. Lord willing, I hope. Now, let's actually talk about the finish of the weekend that I think a lot of folks are going to remember for a long, long time. At least if you're Ryan Sieg and Sam Mayer, Now, it looked like for a while that Cinderella was going to have a big moment in Fort Worth, Texas, because Ryan Sieg, who's never won an Xfinity Series race, in fact, he's never won a NASCAR touring race in terms of the Cup Xfinity and Truck Series, he was within a few laps of making it happen for his team, his family-owned team, RSS Racing. And in the final lap, Sam Mayer caught up to him in turn two. They were side by side. Sam's pulling away. It looks like he's going to be driving off to the sunset. And then Ryan Sieg drives it in real deep, commits to it, sticks the landing, if I might say. They're side by side going off of turn three and four. And you knew they're going to bump fenders. They're going to bump doors. You know, not going to crash each other out, but they're going to definitely make life on each other really difficult. And it looked like Darlington 2003, when they got to the dog leg, and when they got to the stripe, the camera clearly shows that, unfortunately, Ryan Sieg, if you're, I'm saying unfortunately if you're a Ryan Sieg fan, lost. And it was real close, 0.002 seconds. That's closer than what Daniel Suarez experienced at Atlanta earlier this year. I love these close finishes. I love the fact that these intermediates, no matter if it's Atlanta or Texas, are delivering on this, no matter what series. Now, you talked about it a little bit earlier, Brooklyn, but I know for you, you said Texas has brought a little bit of good challenges. It's good racing all around. But how fascinating was Saturday's race in terms of what led to that historical photo finish?
I honestly think, I mean, like I said earlier, all three races were very interesting, had me on the edge of my seat, literally, in a way, but had me very intrigued. I mean, 100% attention. But the Xfinity race, I think just the people, I mean, the fact that it was Ryan Sieg, and you're like, he's never won. I mean, is he going to do it? And then it turns into the next to fastest Xfinity finish ever, and the closest Texas finish for Xfinity ever. I think that's definitely what made it interesting. For Cup, you know, the finish was obviously interesting because Chase's winless streak was broken, but this was just interesting because it was even closer than Daniel Suarez's finish, like you said. And like I just said, it was kind of a Cinderella story. I mean, so that made it really fun. And heartbreaking for Ryan Sieg. Cinderella didn't turn out on the right side of the checkered line in this case. But if you're a Sam Mayer person, it was a great day. And Sam Mayer definitely, he also needed the win. He needed some good momentum too. So that was good to see if you are a fan of that camp or kind of watching them. But yeah,
Sam Mayer has been in the middle of a rough start to the season. I mean, he was mired all the way down to 16th place in points going into Texas. Now he's ranked 14th, but in his case, unlike a lot of his regular season colleagues, he's got playoff points. So when we restart to see that, you know, we see these drivers get to the playoffs, I know it's a long ways from now, but you have to imagine, we haven't even hit up the road courses, and Sam won a bunch of them last year, and he's really good at those. We haven't hit more intermediates yet, and we know he's also good there too, as he proved on Saturday at Texas. So the number one car, once the number one team, once they find their groove with Marty Lindley and Sam Mayer, when their confidence is high, they're as dangerous as Austin Hill, Chandler Smith, Cole Custer, even Justin Allgaier, who seems to enjoy being the bridesmaid. I'm not saying he loves being the bridesmaid, but just when you think Justin Allgaier is going to break through the victory lane, well, things happen. That's not his fault, but it does get probably really frustrating for him to, you know, lead all those laps, get those playoff points, and then you just don't get the victory. And then in the case of AJ Allmendinger, you're kind of wondering, was it worth coming back to the Xfinity Series? It's tough to put into words because I know what AJ's capable of, and I'm not saying he's not a good driver. He's an excellent driver, and I'm saying, and College Racing's a good team, but they seem to be having to fight their head above water on occasions. And I know they're more than capable of doing better than being a seventh place team in points. So, you know, Chandler Smith obviously is off to a hot start. You know, Austin Hill is always off to a hot start every season. And Jesse Love has been really impressive. He doesn't look like a rookie driver to me in that Very RCR impressive. Car. He is super impressive, super mature too for a young 19-year-old driver who drives more like a 29-year-old driver with his maturity and acumen with the Xfinity Series. And the scary fact too, although he's not eligible for the playoffs, Eric Almirola is 16th in points. Just imagine if they thought, why don't we put him in that car full time? He would be he's ranked higher in points than Jeremy Clements, Leland Honeyman, Kyle Weatherman, even Jeb Burton, who's a full-time competitor. And Jeb's been an awful, awful start to the season. But he might be looking forward to returning to Talladega Super Speedway this weekend with this Saturday's AG Pro 300. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So good stuff in the Xfinity Series side. And yes, eventually Nathan Solomon's going to be back on our show. But again, he's got a lot of obligations with senior year and calling baseball games, anything going on ESPN Plus on campus. So if you're listening to our show and you have ESPN Plus or Hulu, go support our buddy. Give him the ratings he needs as he prepares to be a senior. He's not entering the NBA draft. He doesn't have an NIL deal, but he is definitely a sensation and an MP award-winning journalist. So support our buddy, and he will be back, I promise you. Now let's go talk about other drivers who are kind of like buddies right now. In fact, last year they drove Talladega Nights paint schemes, which is, I thought, really funny. And it just so happens that those two drivers are actually having a pretty good time of things in the Cup Series. I'm talking about Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece, because right now in the point standings, I mean, for Swordhaus standards, they look really, really good. It's surprisingly a strong start for Ryan Preece. I know he's 24th in points. That doesn't sound really impressive. But when you think about the company he's around, like a Michael McDowell, Josh Berry, Ricky Stenhouse, Eric Jones, John Hunter Nemechek, and Austin Cindric, they're all within, within grasp for him to overtake these next several weeks. It's not unrealistic for him to join the top 20. Then you have Chase Briscoe, who obviously has been on a hot streak. He's got top 10 finishes in a row. He's moved up from 16th to 12th in points, which doesn't sound too impressive, but you have to consider that in the Cup Series, we're probably going to have some non-winning drivers still making their way or pointing their way into the playoffs. And Chase could definitely parlay consistency and maybe earn some playoff points to be in the playoffs. With the pace that they've been showing from the 14 cars, with Richard Boswell back with Chase Briscoe, I've been wondering why, what took them so long to bring them together, because they were so good with each other in 2020 in the Xfinity Series. And it's clear that these two have good chemistry. And it's starting to show. They're starting to reap the benefits of their reunion. And I know a lot of fans are really thrilled about that on the Chase Briscoe side, especially if you are a Reddit user. So your boy is doing really well. And Ryan Preece, who is from Connecticut, I know New Englanders love seeing him do well because he represents us hard-nosed people. We certainly are built a bit differently. and he'll say stuff that sometimes may fly off the handle, but that's how we are. But listen, he and Chad Johnston are looking really good right now. They are not overdriving the car. He's not overdriving the car. They're not making silly mistakes. They're actually doing what they have to do to get to the finishes. Now, they had a few rough stretches at Austin and Richmond, but they've turned it around. You know, they have a 14th at Bristol, 16th at Atlanta, 9th at Martinsville, and now a 12th at Texas. SHR is kind of in an unusual situation because on Saturday, a lot of press were kind of nudging Ryan and being like, hey, Ryan, have you heard about what may happen with SHR contracting, losing one car? You might be the odd man out, you know? With all of these distractions that are going on in Brooklyn, what are your thoughts about how the SHR boys are, how they're handling things and perhaps even tuning out what people like us are talking about right now?
I think they are doing a an amazing job, as good of a job as anybody on this earth could do, of doing what they're paid to do, putting their heads down, going to work, getting good finishes and executing. I think SHR may, I kind of feel like I would love to know the conversations they've been having, because I feel like they've just figured some stuff out as a whole camp, over the off season into the first races of this season. I've just feel like we were talking about with Chase, it's just taken a minute, but they've kind of started to put some good finishes together. They've started to get the good momentum back, that we used to see from them. But they kind of slipped for a few seasons and didn't have as good of finishes as they would expect from themselves, and maybe we would expect from them. But like I said, I feel like they've had some good productive conversations and have slowly started figuring this next gen era out.
And it's good to see because we've been kind of been critical of SHR, if I'm going to be honest, especially since last year when Harvick was winless in his final season. And we were kind of wondering what happened to Chase Briscoe. Ryan Preece struggled and Eric Almirola. It took him a while to kind of find what it was like to be a contender again. And then Martinsville happened. Was with a few laps from making a swan song exit to out of cup before Ryan Blaney parlayed the victory at Martinsville to win his championship last year. But SHR has been kind of in a tough rut. But now you're starting to feel like if you're a fan of that team, that Ryan or even Chase could probably snap that long winless streak that they've been in for so long. It's been like, I think it's been 2 years, honestly, since that team has won. So, like Chase Elliott fans, SHR fans can empathize. They know pain. They know pain all too well of being in this long, stagnant purgatory of what's going to happen to our team, what's going to happen to our drivers. And
They,
it's tough when you.
I feel like there's a sunset on the hor well, not a sun, a sunrise, rather. Let me not make the wrong metaphor. There is a sunrise on the horizon for SHR. I've just been impressed with them this at the you know, the first quarter, fourth of the season. I mean, they've just been, like we've been saying with Chase, like a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, the old Chase is back, the old Chase is back, you know, like the old SHR is back, the old Chase Briscoe, Ryan Preece that we know is still in there, they're back.
And they're still young. Don't get it wrong, folks. Just because
Yes, they aren't old.
they're not Ty Gibbs young. They're certainly not born in 2002 young, but Ryan Preece, he's what, 33 years old. I mean, that's young. He was born in 1990, so my favorite group's album was just released that year, Depeche Mode Violator, in case you're wondering. So that's not too long ago. And then Chase Briscoe, I think he was born in like 1994. He doesn't even turn 30 till later this year, which is weird to say. And he and Marissa are gonna have twins, which I think he's been inspired. I said that last week, I said a few weeks ago. Since that news has come out, I feel like there's been a pep in his step that's really good to see from the Mitchell, Indiana driver. So I love seeing Chase being a little bit more confident, a lot happier, not having the dark cloud over his shoulder that we saw last year when they had that points penalty that they could never overcome. And speaking of point penalty, Ryan Preece has overcome one too. Let's not forget, at Atlanta, they got a ton of points taken away from them. So for him and the number 41 team to be 24th in points, that's saying a lot because without that penalty, he would probably be, top 17, top 15 right now, up there with Chase Briscoe. So SHR being back is not as crazy as you think it sounds. And if you think we're crazy, you can meet my fist after work. Kidding.
The Chases and Ryans just have a lot to be confident about right now.
They certainly do. And Ford can be like, I'll see your chase with my chase. So that's how they're doing it up now in the world of NASCAR. But don't worry, I'm sure Toyota is up to their evil, devious ways. I don't know. I'm trying to start controversy that's not really there. I like doing that. It's like a fan fiction, but not really. Anyways, it is now time to give our superlatives before we get to winning time. This is when we tell you folks who impressed us the most and who really needs a Goody's headache powder after Texas Motor Speedway race weekend. So, because I'm a gentleman, ladies first. So, Brooklyn, go ahead and give me your thoughts on who impressed you the most and who needs a Goody's headache powder.
Oh my goodness, this may be the most difficult time I've had putting these together. I mean, do I go Sam Mayer and Ryan Sieg? Do I go Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott? I mean, there's just so many options this weekend. I'm going to have to say, just purely because I've been talking about it and it finally happened, I was impressed by Mr. Chase Elliott this weekend because he not only had to overcome one restart to win, snap his winless streak. I lost count, honestly. How many restarts did we have? Four? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think it was four
Four or
restarts.
five? Four?
Four.
Okay. He had to overcome and come out on the right side of four restarts. That's impressive. And who needs a headache powder? Goodness. Like I said, with who I was impressed with, I mean, I could give this to a lot of people, but I'm going to have to give it to Ryan Sieg. I mean, I happened to write about him this week in his finish this weekend, and the pictures of him that our photographers got after the race. Oh my goodness, you could just the emotions on his face were palpable. I mean, he definitely needed a headache powder. I can't imagine being that close to your first Xfinity win, first NASCAR win. And then 0.002 seconds, the trophy goes to Sam Mayer.
That is what I call pain. That is basically like if you saw your favorite celebrity or athlete and you're actually in the same vicinity of them, you're calling their name out, you're like this close to them, and they walk past you. And you're just like, I should have just stayed at home and not even traveled. Like, oh, so close. I may have been in that position a few times as a kid. I know the pain. So. Yeah, oh man, Ryan Sieg. I really thought he had that one, and it was feeling like it was because
It felt that way for sure.
Ryan Blaney, no, not Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano and Ross Chastain in the booth, they were feeling it about this potential story.
Oh, they
And
were freaking out. I thought it was hilarious. I love getting any driver in the booth. I always think that's funny.
I love the fact that they were like, oh my goodness, this is gonna happen. Look at this, look at this. And then when Sam Mayer caught up to him, they were almost, I wouldn't say they weren't rooting against him, but they were more like, oh no, this story's gonna go away. This is what we wanted to see. And it's not like Sam Mayer's a bad guy. He's a
No,
good
of
dude by all
course.
means.
He's Superman. I love his Superman celebrations. I always love seeing the videos and photos of that. He's a fun person. Yeah.
Super fun. And yeah, we'll drop his interview on the TPF Live podcast and his story at some point this month. I'm still unloading all 12 interviews, by the way. So you folks at home, be patient, because I know if you see my YouTube channel, it's like seeing Santa Claus's gift, the sleigh, and you already know what's gonna happen. But if you are too lazy to go look up youtube.com/@RobTyongson, by the way, subscribe to that channel. Shameless plug. We'll have a lot more of interviews from Sam, and in fact, Eric Jones is going to be the latest interview we'll drop from COTA. So that's going to be a lot of fun for you folks to hear. And if he didn't read the article, shame on you. It's a nice long form feature about Eric's thoughts on the team's evolution since switching over to Toyota and the impact of having Richard Petty and Matt Kenseth around on campus. But I digress. Those are some good thoughts about who needs a goodies headache powder and Ryan Sieg and Chase Elliott being the driver that impressed you the most. Now, for me, the driver who impressed me the most, it seems kind of like I'm not trying to be condescending when I say this, but Kyle Busch impressed me because his weekend was a tale of two cities. Now, of course, he had to work for it to win on Friday night in the truck race. We knew that was going to happen. He ties top of nine for most truck victories at Texas with six, and certainly adds to his amazing NASCAR Hall of Fame legacy. But I would be lying to you if I thought that he was going to overcome what happened on Saturday in practice. He wrecks in practice off turn two. He's going backwards like he did in the 2023 Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400, which, by the way, I saw that in person, and I thought, what's he doing, Cole Trickle? And yet, yeah, I know Trishan played a part, but yet, Kyle Busch and Randall Burnett, they stuck together. They persevered. They got themselves a good top 10 finish. And honestly, it's kind of nice to see Kyle. I mean, he's still very competitive. I'm not saying he's gotten soft on us because Lord knows that man is Teflon. But when he has
Christopher Bell 3-4 weeks ago now,
basically a month
Let's
ago.
Let's not forget that.
Right. Yeah, he's still an ornery driver. Don't you worry. Old age doesn't mean that you all of a sudden forget to go and get feisty and get spicy. He'll get in your throat. But it was good to see him get a top 10 finish. And I know that number 18 needs some good finishes. So, you know, where they're ranked in points, it's not what you expect out of Kyle Busch. But, you know, at some point when they find victory lane, which could be as soon as Sunday afternoon at Talladega, because he is the defending race winner after all, once he finds victory lane, he often finds a way to get back to it not too long after his most recent victory. So I'm impressed by him. And yes, I could say Kyle Larson's a goodies headache powder, but he's fine. I mean, he's having the time of his life right now. He won three poles in a row. He was second quickest in Indianapolis 500 open tests. Speed charts, as we talked last week. He's doing high limit racing, which he has a ball with doing. So I don't think I can, I'm not going to sympathize too much with him right now. I don't feel sorry. I will say that the person I'm going to give a goodies headache powder award, this is kind of a surprising one, I guess you could say. I am going to give this actually to Jimmy Johnson, because Lord knows, yes, he did get a lead lap finish. He got the car back home in one piece. But I wish he kind of just didn't come back. No, I don't hate you, Jimmy. You're good. You're a great driver. And this show is about opinions. I'm not giving journalist Rob thoughts. This is just regular Rob thoughts. Oh, I wish his last start should have been the 2020 season finale at Phoenix when it was all good. He was faster than the championship four cars, got a top five finish, and life was good. It hasn't been good since he's come back.
I honestly, I thought about him when he had the caution. I thought about giving him my headache powder, but I was internally, I was like, do I want to give it to him or do I want to give it to me for my heart? Like, just as like, just that's Jimmy Johnson. Like, he's just this staple in the sport. I mean, I think nobody can deny respecting him. I mean, he's won a championship seven times. I mean, that's something to admire. I mean, and just seeing someone like that kind of struggle, it's not fun.
It's honestly, it reminds me of when you see your favorite baseball pitcher, like a Nolan Ryan or Pedro Martinez, lose their fastball, and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, their slider is not as good, their curveball is actually kind of crappy. Maybe you played it, you've been in the game a little too long, you gotta, you know, quit while you're ahead. And Jimmy's record's been impressive. He's got 83 Cup victories. He's got seven championships, 36 poles. And obviously, he's a NASCAR Hall of Famer, as we saw earlier this year when he was inducted. But this is not Cale Yarborough all of a sudden deciding, I'm going to race a Hardy's car, and I'm going to pick and choose what races I can race in, and I'll win them. This is a different landscape in NASCAR Cup Series racing, and I thought Kevin Harvick said it really well. Because of Jimmy's lack of experience in a next-gen car, he's going to have an awfully difficult time trying to succeed. It is tough to see him struggle like this, because younger fans, not saying you, Brooklyn, but younger folks out there are probably thinking, Jimmy's good? Really? All I can see of him is just wrecking and spinning. And what makes him so good? Kind of like when I started watching NASCAR and I didn't realize that Darrell Waltrip was this amazing race car driver. But by the time I caught up to Cup racing in 1981, that was pretty much the twilight of his career. I mean, he won a couple of times in 91, a couple of times in 92, but then never visited Victory Lane after that. And honestly, I thought he raced a little too long, but I get it. When you love something so much and you want to keep being involved in it, it's hard to walk away. So I think maybe in this case, I think we have to look at Jimmy's current era in NASCAR as more him just gathering notes for Legacy Motor Club. So if you're expecting him to contend for victories, I honestly don't think he should expect that. He's probably the R&D guy.
Right. I agree. I did really like what Kevin Harvick said, and I thought it was very eloquent. And I mean, he has experience. I mean, he knows firsthand. He has not spent a lot of time in the next gen car, and we have seen this be a long adjustment period for all of the drivers. I mean, it's been a long adjustment period and a difficult one for many, many of them. So I don't think we can expect, I think this is just shows that we can't expect even one of the sport's brightest stars that we have ever seen to come back and just immediately contend. And I think that shows, for one, how difficult the sport is, and for two, how much talent we have and how much effort it takes to be as good as we expect Jimmy Johnson to be.
It's incredibly difficult. And even if you're of his caliber, to quote Allen Iverson, you need practice, practice, practice. And unfortunately, in this era of NASCAR Cup Series racing, drivers don't get a lot of practice. And testing, we ain't got no testing anymore. It's when, if Goodyear calls you over, you raise your hand and you run over to whatever track that is, even if that's Dover. And it's not like the good old days where they could go pick and choose a race and lose like one of their five weekends. No, this is the "we're not going to let you do as much as we want you to" era of Cup racing. So it is a difficult situation for Jimmy. That's why I say he needs to get his headache powder right now. He doesn't race for another while, so we'll see what comes out of that situation. I will say he probably will surprise us and maybe have a competitive finish at some point, but to expect the good things that you saw from him back in his days in the 48 car, I think that's just chasing. It's like being on Don Quixote. You're just chasing windmills at this point. So I know his next start will be to Dover in a couple of weeks, which I know Josh Jones, our captain in photography, is looking forward to, as well as Jenny Lingle, who's been counting down the Dover since I was at COTA. So Jenny, shout out to you, and potentially Daniel Rankin as well. And then you don't have to wait too long for Jimmy to race again, because he races at Kansas, Charlotte, and then you have to wait a while when we get to Indy, and then he'll close out his season at Kansas, Las Vegas, and oh, by the way, the championship four race weekend at Phoenix. So you'll get your dose of Jimmy this year, folks. I just hope you're ready to have some goodies headache powder on hand. But Jimmy, prove me wrong, because I know you've done that before. Do it again for me, because I want to see you do that.
I think we may need heartache powder for that.
Oh, poor guy.
Like you said with Kyle Larson, what kind of gets me through that is like, he's okay. He's Jimmy Johnson. I mean, he's fine. You know, ultimately, he's still living his best life. I mean, he has legacy. He has his girls. He has Chandra. I mean,
He lives in England.
He's fine.
He's got horses to come home to when he flies across the Atlantic. Yeah, this is not, he's no, he's not, you know, middle class guy who, you know, found out that the tickets to the Indiana Fever are so expensive that he can't go. Me. Me. Sorry. I'll be all right. Be all right. Anyways, now that I'm just making fun of myself and my family's probably going to disown me after the show, let's go into winning time right now on TPF Live. This is when we name our picks to win Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series AG Pro 300 or AG Pro 300, however you say it. I'm not a farmer. I don't know how that goes. I know the defending race winner is Jeb Burton. And yes, folks, he has entered into the race and could do something big again for Jordan Anderson Racing. And then on Sunday, we have the NASCAR Cup Series Geico 500, also Talladega, and Kyle Busch and his number 8 Richard Childers Racing team are the defending champions. Don't forget, he had to survive quite a few overtime finishes, or restarts rather, to win the race. Namely because Noah Gragson tried to fit into a hole that he could not make with Kyle Larson. So, before I give my thoughts, again, ladies first. So, Brooklyn, go ahead and give us your wisdom, your awesome picks right now.
I don't know how awesome my picks are going to be because it's Talladega. I don't think many people can predict what the future of Talladega will bring us. If you can message me and maybe we can talk. So my long story short, my picks are may seem a little wild, but I mean, they do have some base behind them. So for Xfinity, I think Mr. Ryan Sieg is going to use this last weekend and put together his first win at Talladega. I think it's just going to all come together for them this weekend. And for Cup, I think another driver will snap a winless streak at Talladega. We will see an American flag doing burnouts because Mr. Brad Keselowski will win.
Those are not bold picks, but those are great outside of the box picks right there. I love where you're going with that. And I certainly think we'll see that the four teams are going to be enjoying Talladega. I know that Harvick was saying, I'm interested to see if the Fords can do well. And he says that every week. But honestly, at Talladega, if you love the Blue Oval, you love the dark horses, this is probably your weekend as well, because I am going in that direction as well. For Saturday's Xfinity Series race, I am actually going to go and choose Riley Herbst to go and get the victory. I know he's kind of had one. He's always had these weird starts to the year. I know last season everybody was like, man, he's so good. And yeah, he is a good driver. But this season's kind of been feast or famine for him. He is sixth place in points after all. And he does have a stage win. So he's not too far off the points lead. But he is missing the seasoning on his steak for his year. So if he went to Talladega, that New York strip tastes a lot better, knowing that there's a bit of salt and pepper to make that steak a little bit more memorable for him. So I look forward to seeing him win on Saturday afternoon. As far as Sunday's concerned, I mean, you think about the Ford camp. You have Michael McDowell, who could also pull it off. You've got Ryan Blaney. You know he's good at Talladega. I love where you went with Brad Keselowski. I am going to go and really go outside of the box. I'm going to say Todd Gilliland wins on Sunday. Okay.
I like that too, but it's Talladega. I mean, you're allowed to think outside. I think this is one of the track you're allowed to think the most outside of the box, honestly.
You kind of have to. I mean, these are the races where the disparity gaps, for the most part, are not existent. So someone like Shane Van Gisbergen could contend. Someone like BJ McLeod could contend. Anthony Alfredo, Cody Ware could be in contention. If you stay in the lead draft, you stay out of trouble, you can dart past those wrecks that you know are going to happen because it's just human nature with that yellow line rule. You know that those drivers are going to get aggressive out there. And if you can, you know, needle through the hole and be a master seamstress at Talladega, you've got a good chance as anybody else and good equipment to go and win at Talladega. I just think that, you know, Todd Gilliland's not just only due to win, but he's honestly kind of been, he's been almost there with Ryan Bergenti on the top of the pit box to get things done. So
you can tell he's hungry.
He's extremely hungry to win a race. Came very close at Atlanta, which we talked about on the podcast, and obviously didn't have that happen. But, you know, at the moment, I think the 38 team has something up their sleeves to go and perhaps surprise us all. I love Talladega in that sense. I do get heartburn watching these races.
Talladega does have that effect on me also. Super speedways just give me a lot of anxiety and like, do I really want to watch this restart? Do I or do I want to like turn my head for a second? Can I take another restart? Can I, oh my heavens, oh, can I take another pit stop?
Can we see another four wide situation where everybody just doesn't wreck, but they could have, they should have wrecked.
But you know? Yeah, or knowing, watching for two laps and knowing that they are about to wreck.
I'm just waiting for it to happen. I can't sometimes. And it reminds me what my late friend and mentor Bob Jenkins once said. He goes, I've always believed, I have friends in racing, I'll be transparent. But he always said, I don't have friends that are race car drivers, because the moment something bad happens, that's when I get sad and I feel really heartbroken. And I always cross my fingers that these drivers, these pit crews, are always safe at Talladega, because even the pit crew members are in danger at Talladega. You don't have to necessarily be in those stock cars to be in danger. Just climbing over the wall, or if a fuel spillage happens, like we saw at Texas, you know, harm, you're in harm's way no matter where you are. So it's going to be, it's going to be wild and intense. I mean, Harrison Burton probably has a good chance as Kyle Larson to win this race on Sunday. And he, you know, a lot of people are kind of ragging on him to go and get things done. And he just might prove that he could get that done. So the only way to know who wins is to stay tuned on Sunday afternoon and follow the coverage on thepodiumfinish.net. Because we'll have it all for you. It's Stephen Conley and Ricky Martinez on site. Now, before we go and do our little transition to hot seat, big shout out to Sean Folsom, Dylan Nadwadny, and Cody Porter on a job well done at Texas Motor Speedway. Well done covering all the action at NASCAR's triple header weekend. And for Dylan and Sean, even doing the high limit racing sprint car race on Saturday night. I know that they're really tired, but they're young and there's a Raising Cane's across the street. So I know that if you're covering racing and you're tired, that's a good kind of tired versus day job tired. And you're just like, oh, please let it be Wednesday. Please let it be Thursday. And in their case, they're just like, oh, I just need 6 hours of rest. So well job. Well done. Well job. Well done, y'all. Really proud of y'all. And looking forward to seeing what Stephen and Ricky do this weekend. Now, if you have different thoughts on podium perspectives, or if you want to give us your race picks, hit us up on At The Podium Finish on all across our social media platforms on X, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, even Threads. Go for it. Hit us up. If you happen to get the race winning picks correct, we'll send you an in-stock diecast car 164 scale from spoilerdiecast.com. That simple, that easy. With that, folks, we're heading down the home stretch on episode 113. So sit back and relax, because we're getting into the hot seat right now with Eric Jones. I'm Rob Tiongson.
I'm Eric Jones.
And you're here in the hot seat here for the podium finish. Eric, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And of course, you are the driver of the number 43 Family Dollar Toyota Camry XSE fielded by Legacy Motor Club. And I know you're no stranger to the Toyota family just to start things off. So, you know, last year it was announced that y'all would be switching over to Toyota. So I'm just kind of curious how the adjustment's been going so far and working with your new allies at the Toyota camp and just some of the challenges and things your guys are navigating together with this 43 team.
Yeah, it's been a change, you know, overall. Anytime you switch manufacturers, it's more of a change, you know, for the guys working on it and more of the engineering side of things. For me, you know, the motor feels a little bit different and, you know, may handle a little different in traffic. But, you know, the engineers and the guys who are kind of going through the weeds of, you know, figuring out a new simulation program and getting comfortable with that. So it's been good. You know, it's been a work in progress, and it's, I think, you know, going to continue to be until, you know, we get everything kind of scienced out. But overall, I think it's been a positive change for us.
And at least you have some familiarity with this change, because again, you're working with your crew chief, Dave Ellens, and I know you guys have been gelling. And in fact, late last year, and we talked about it during your most recent interview up until now, that you guys were getting some great top 10 finishes. So do you feel like you and Dave are hitting on a rhythm, and it's just a matter of just the right circumstances happening to you guys at the right time?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think Dave does a good job, and, you know, overall, it's going to take just getting more time on the track with this car and getting a baseline for some sim notes and for car notes, and being able to go back to these places for a second time is going to be important for us later in the year. And it was similar last year too. When we could go back to places for a second time, it was good for us after we had lost some of our information in the changeover to Toyota. So, you know, I think it's going to be a bit similar this year. We want to accelerate that, you know, process if we can in any way, and we're working our hardest to do that. But anytime we can get more and more information is going to be better for us.
And you're getting a lot of good information, I'm sure, from your teammate, John Hunter Nemechek, who's back in the Cup Series full time. And he and his number 42 team have been doing pretty well, just about the same as you guys, with luck on their corner more so than you guys. But how have you guys been working together and coalescing as a unit this year?
It's been good. You know, yeah, they've been doing a good job just finishing the races out. We've just not been able to kind of close these days out and get the finishes we need and want. So, you know, hoping to turn that around and kind of have that start coming our way. But, you know, it's been good. You know, obviously Ben's come over and has been a new addition for us as well at Legacy. He was over at JGR before. So, you know, Ben's brought some resource, and John Hunter's done a good job to this point of making the most of his days. And, you know, he's really, you know, I know he's not a rookie, but he's never drove this car really a lot, just once before. So he's learning a lot and been doing a good job in that transition, figuring everything out.
Yeah, I think folks get the mistaken impression that John Hunter is a rookie, and he's not. And even if he were, he's a pretty talented driver, just like you are. And you guys have had some battles in the Truck Series as well, and the Xfinity Series. When you bring on a rival and a formidable competitor like him to the fold, how is it like to all of a sudden go, well, you're still my competitor, but also we're kind of family now at this point?
Yeah, it's good. You want two cars that are running well, and that's something that, you know, in the history of Legacy so far, we've struggled with. We've had the 43 car, you know, contend and run up front and be able to win, and we haven't been able to get the 42 to that same point. And, you know, this has been the best start for sure with the 42 car over the last couple of years for us. So it's nice to have two cars with speed. You know, you want to have both the teams running well and being able to, you know, glean more information off of. It's tough when you got one car running good and the other struggling. You can't always learn a lot from that, and it makes it harder to grow and move forward. So having two cars running well, it gives you a lot more database to work for, and it makes you better as a group.
And certainly with all the changes that are happening with the road course and short track package, it is going to be very helpful to have all that data, all the information that you guys can have, because this is going to be the second race this weekend with you guys having this somewhat modified package that we started seeing last year. We got a taste of it at Phoenix. I know you guys haven't had a chance to practice as of now, but what do you anticipate the car to be like this weekend at a road course like Circuit of the Americas?
Yeah, it's different for sure. You know, I think honestly, I think the car is going to probably drive a little better, which will be good. You know, the cars were driving really, you know, not great with the other package, and that was making racing challenging. So, you know, I hope the racing's good. Phoenix is a tough test for any package, any car. It's just a tough race, tough track to really put on a great show at with the aero effects that we have there and the speed. It's a tough area to work in. So, I think that's a hard test for it. I think Kodo will probably be a better feel for what it's really going to do in traffic and what its capabilities are going forward. So, we'll see how it does. Like I said, I hope it's good. The road course racing has been a big challenge for us, along with the short track stuff with the next gen car. So, hoping that it's a positive one, and I think we'll learn a lot more this weekend than really we did at Phoenix.
And the unique caveat too, Eric, is the fact that you guys, I believe, will get 2 20-minute practice sessions on Saturday. In a way, isn't that a good thing because of how track conditions can evolve after cars have been on track and the rubber's been laid out with the Goodyear tires?
Yeah, well, I think for us, practice is always good. Right now we need time on the track. We don't, unfortunately, we don't really have any tests this year. We had one at Bristol, but that was a wet weather test, and we couldn't really learn a lot, and we don't really have any others going forward. So we need track time, and Phoenix was a big help for us. We had a test out there last year, late in the year, and then we were able to have a 50-minute session. And we ran good, we qualified good. I thought we had a top 10 car, and things didn't work out. But anytime we can get on track and just have more data, that's a benefit for us just going forward. It gives us some more notes, and especially on the road course stuff, our road course package hasn't been where we've wanted it. COTA was probably one of our better road course races last year. We qualified well, and we were running okay. We had some contact that hurt us quite a bit, but we were running okay, so hopefully we can kind of carry that over. But practice is definitely good for us this year.
I would say so. And I think from the press side of things, we just like to see as much action as possible versus things falling apart unfairly to the teams and drivers. But that's my perspective, of course. But bringing it back to you, Eric, the one thing I think that makes Coda so unique is just that really sharp left-hander in turn one, known as Big Red. And as we've seen in stage three in the final stage, that has been the crazy zone of Coda. So knowing this for the first three races and going into this race weekend, is there a bit of trepidation, or are you looking at this as a area of opportunity to leapfrog for positions on restarts?
Well, I feel better with this restart zone. We moved it there around closer to the corner, closer to turn 20, and I think that's going to help quite a bit. I think the first probably 3 to 4 rows will stay really bunched up, and you'll have an opportunity to make a big move up there. As you fall farther behind that, we're still going to be, if you're in row 5 on, you're going to kind of be in that turn 20 and just coming out of it trying to get straightened up. So, it's going to create a nice gap through the field where you don't have the total chaos. You'll still have opportunities for the guys racing for the lead to make a move, but it'll eliminate some of that mass chaos towards the middle half of the field where we were seeing a lot of wrecks and guys just really dive bombing the corner, and it just got a little out of hand. Everybody wants exciting restarts, and we do too. We want opportunities, but it was just probably a bit too far. So hoping that helps, and like I said, if you're up front, I think you're still gonna have a chance to make big moves.
It's a good, happy compromise between chaos and organization, and nobody feeling like Phil Connors in Groundhog Day, where you're like, really? We're going to another restart. We're going to another overtime. Like, as a driver, doesn't that kind of aggravate you, where you're like, seriously, folks, we're almost done with the race. I really just want to get this done.
Yeah, it pretty much does in almost every situation, unless you had maybe you're running second or third and you think, a restart's going to give you a shot to win. That's probably the only time you're happy about a late race caution. Even if you're running, feel like ninth or 10th and you get down to taking the white, it's like, man, that was probably going to be an okay day. That was probably what your car was capable of. And now you got an opportunity to more of an opportunity to wreck rather than run a lot better, depending on how things work out. Especially if you're the leader, you see that caution. That's never very fun. And so, yeah, it's tough. And COTA and the road courses have been, obviously definitely more chaotic than the ovals on these restarts. So it makes for a tough one.
Absolutely. So I hope it's not as bad as last year, but certainly it's always fun to see the jockeying for position going into turn one and into that crazy smooth S's before you get to the technical parts of Coda for sure. And before we get to on to other questions, I do want to know from a driver's standpoint, you have actually had a pretty decent track record at Coda. So what is it about this road course that suits you as a driver? And what parts of the racetrack do you go, man, I really love this part. This is where I feel like I can be on the attack all the time.
That's a good question. I don't really know. COTA is It's a really unique road course for us. There's nothing else that we do is like it. Watkins Glen and Sonoma are very different. And obviously, the Roval, it's kind of its own animal, along with Chicago. So it's a road course not necessarily designed for our cars. It's designed for lightweight, high downforce, open wheel cars. And so when we go there, it's a pretty big challenge just to try to make lap time and not make mistakes. I think a lot of it is just putting together good laps. You can't try to charge and do too much. You just got to make sure you're putting kind of everything together good. And so I don't know what's fit the most. I put in the last few years, I put a lot of simulator time in and just trying to get better at it and learning. And so it's worked out other than maybe last year, but hopefully we've had good speed, so hopefully we can keep that going.
We won't worry about last year because that was an exception to the rules where there was no stage break cautions. This is more of a traditional Cup road course race. So hopefully a clean slate for you guys heading into this weekend. And the one thing I do love that what's going on this year is that it's the Petty family 75th anniversary in NASCAR. And I know at each race weekend stop, they're having Richard Petty's famous cowboy hat in the fan zone. And while we're heading to Texas, it's kind of a cowboy hat kind of state. So what is it like to be able to add on to Richard Petty's legacy in that 43 car in your own right and also celebrate the Petty family's special anniversary?
Yeah, it's been fun being in the 43 now. It's I didn't know the Petties that well before I came over, and getting to know Richard better, and Kyle and all their family really over the last few years has been a lot of fun. But seeing them have the honor this year has been pretty neat. Obviously, a really cool program with the hat at all these tracks going around, and seeing them design their own hat and make it a little unique and different everywhere, and have something there that's going to honor him at every race permanently. So I think that means a lot to him, and it's been neat to see for myself. But it's been fun to drive 43. I've been working on trying to make my own mark in it and hoping we can continue to do it more and more and better, but trying to go out and run well for Richard. It's always fun to see him when we go out and run well, and when we can go out and have success. He's definitely really excited about it.
And he always has sage wisdom, to say the least. And one of the quotes that I love from Richard is when he says, "The best that you can do on any given day is to put yourself in a position to win and let circumstances dictate the outcome." When you get wise like the advice from Richard, does it kind of resonate with you, or you're just thinking, "Great, but how does this connect to me as a driver today?"
No, I always love anything I can get from him. He's always got something to add on usually, and advice to give, and he's always asking questions too. He's always curious about what we're doing and what's different about the car and what our plan is for the weekend and how we're gonna get better. So fun to see him around. We were up at the shop a couple of days ago doing some simulator work, and Richard and Dale came in and stopped by and said hi, and we're laughing at our simulator a little bit and what we were doing there and just checking it out. So it's always fun to have them come around and be at the racetrack and in the shop, and they make sure always to come around and say hi. So it's always neat to see them.
That's awesome. I'm just kind of curious if the king has ever wanted to be in the simulator with you guys.
No, I told him to get in, and he was not about it. I don't think it's gonna happen.
It's a shame. It would be a really cool clip to see for his channel and just for racing fans to see Richard in any kind of car at this point. Because obviously, growing up in racing, just to see him do what he does is really fun to watch. Now, I got a couple more questions before I wrap things up because I know we have a few more minutes left. We know that earlier this year, Matt Kenseth joined the team and he's going to be lending his expertise and knowledge to Legacy Motor Club. And I know you guys work together at JGR. So, what's it like to have a familiar face back in the fold, and how has he been contributing to the team?
Been good. Matt's been helping bridge the gap with the drivers to the team, and things we need and as drivers to make us better has kind of been his main objective since he's come over to Legacy. So it's been fun. He's been really involved, been really interested in everything we've got going on. I think he's coming to a handful more races through the season, but he's been doing a lot with us, been just trying to help us out on all sides of things, from the Toyota relationship to the team relationship and sponsor relationship. So He's been a good value for us so far, and looking forward just to seeing what we can do more throughout the year. But he's definitely been working a lot with the drivers and helping us on whatever we've needed.
That's really cool to hear. I hope he's not been challenging you guys to doing some marathons like how he's doing past the age of 50, because I don't know how he's doing all those marathons.
He's left us out on that. I think we're both probably good on passing on the marathons.
That's fair. That's fair. But that's safe to say that's not one of your hidden talents, Eric. But what would you say is a hidden talent that most folks wouldn't know about that you can do, whether on or off the track?
Oh man, a hidden talent. I have no idea. Yeah, I do some karaoke now and then. I feel like I can do okay at that. So yeah, every once in a while, we'll get some karaoke going and I'll get into
Interesting. Not that I'm going to ask you to sing on the spot, but is there like a
it.
particular comfort artist or a genre you go into?
I usually like Toby Keith should have been a cowboy. And unfortunately, yeah, rest in peace to Toby. That was pretty sad there a while ago, but that's always been my go-to karaoke song.
I could see you doing that with the cowboy hat on and with like the deep voice. So I know you'll never share that because you're pretty cool about not sharing that stuff, but I'll try to imagine it, and I think you'll do a pretty good job for sure. Now, I know you're a big time book fan, so if you were stuck on a deserted island, what books would you bring to survive the rest of your life in a deserted island?
Oh man, that's a tough question. Man, I've never read a book twice, to be honest. Trying to think of favorite books I've read over the years that I would read again. Trying to think. I liked Matthew McConaughey's book a few years ago. I would read that again. That's probably got some good advice in that situation. Two others is tough. I don't know. I guess I'd have to pick some kind of survival book. Living by myself on an island, I would probably need some advice on that, so I'd pick a survival book. And the last one, it's been entertaining. I would probably read the Eagles biography again. That was an interesting book. The band, the Eagles, was one of my favorites to read about them. So that would kind of give me something to go to and just read. And I think you'd probably forget a lot of things sitting by yourself on an island. So I'd have to go with those three.
And I didn't know you were a fan of the Eagles. I feel like that's going to be something we'll have to talk about in our next interview. And I love that band too. I have so many opinions to share. So we should do an Eagles talk for our next interview.
Absolutely.
But I know you got to get going soon. Is there anything you want to say to the fans before we wrap things up?
No, thanks for tuning in, and obviously the TV numbers have been great this year, so we all appreciate that. Everybody watching every week. Stands have been packed too. Along with that, so it's been fun to see the support this year really turning out, and hope we can see you at the track soon.
And that was Eric Jones, who was our guest for this week's Hot Seat segment. My thanks, of course, goes to Eric for making that happen a couple weeks ago before the COTA race weekend, and to my buddy and his PR rep, JP Payne. And JP is one of the best in the business. I want to give a big shout out to him because, as I may have mentioned on a podcast a while back, I found a car envelope with a card inside on top of my workspace when I got to COTA on Saturday afternoon, just before cup practice and qualifying. And I thought, oh, what happened? What did I do? Well, I opened the envelope. I got this card. I opened it up. And I won't read the whole thing because I think this is kind of personal. But basically, it's so nice when you work really hard and the people that make this happen for all of us recognize the effort you put into covering races, even if you're not there every weekend, that people like JP recognize in all the hard work that you put forth. So JP, you are the man. Thank you for being awesome and making it happen for all of us to cover the races and do the stories with you with Eric. And certainly, if I can make it to Indianapolis, let's go and do a story about Eric at Indianapolis for the Brickyard 400 race weekend and a bunch more times before the end of the season. And you can check out the article version of that. Nathan will put the article link within our episode description. Now, before we wrap things up on our show, my closing thoughts again are, yes, it's going to be about women's sports, but I am all about the Caitlin Clark effect because, like Chase Elliott does with NASCAR, she's going to do with women's sports. I know people are crapping about, oh, she's only going to make 76K in her salary or something. And yeah, that is a terrible, terrible disparity given that male athletes who are not even starters make more than her. So you know what you should do, folks? Get the merch, watch the games, attend the games. I know that the tickets are pretty crazy. Eventually they should hopefully level out. Maybe you can luck into it, not maybe not this year, but next year. Support the WNBA, support women's sports. And it doesn't have to be Caitlin Clark. You can be an Angel Reese fan, you can be a Cameron Brink fan, you can be a fan of Kate Martin, who by the way got drafted in the second round, and she'll play for the Las Vegas Aces. So I almost kind of think she has it better than Caitlin because she'll be playing for the defending champions, and that's gonna be awesome. But as a man who grew up in a traditional Catholic household, I'm just gonna say this with an open mind. Don't be an ignoramus. Support women. Show them that they matter, and not just athletes. They can be your teachers, like a Brooklyn. They can be, your mother, your sister. We're in the 21st century, and in my opinion, women should be a lot further along. There should be no discussions about, oh, they need equal pay. It should just be like, all right, what can you bring to the table? Why are you so good? Because you are good. So I think we need to do better as a society, and we should champion someone like Caitlyn. No, she's not Taylor Swift, and oh, it's so annoying to see her every 10 seconds on the telecast. No, I kind of understand why people are about, Taylor Swift. I may not be her biggest fan. I can see why she's very catchy though with her music and what she does for girls, and I feel the same way about Caitlin Clark. So whether you like her or not, or you like Angel Reese or anyone else, go and watch women's sports. They're really good. And especially in the Olympics, I'm telling you, it's going to be a good time. So rise up, do the right thing. You're not being just a feminist, you're being a human being. So that's my closing thoughts on the show. What about you, Brooklyn?
Like you, I'm ready for the Olympics too. But I've mentioned this to you and in the chats before, but I am so glad that Chase got his win streak, or not his winless streak, broken. Because as a writer, I just got exhausted of hearing people ask him like the same question over and over again, like, when is it gonna happen? Well, how's this? How's that? What's happening? How are you feeling? Why are you why is this happening to you? It just got kind of tiring. And some people online I see and hear people saying stuff about him getting frustrated with those kind of things. I mean, I can see where he would get frustrated having to answer those kind of questions like week after week, like for a year. I mean, yes, drivers are having to answer the same questions week, multiple times a weekend, but not week after week after week for a whole year. And it's this, even the same worded questions or the same questions exactly. So I'm glad he won just for that, so that people will kind of maybe leave him alone. And okay, he wasn't that that's the only piece he was really missing on his resume, but now he has it, so we can leave him alone. It's back to what we expect. Just chill out. He's fine. So that's my NASCAR thoughts. I've already said Talladega kind of gives me like anxiety, just as Brooklyn and as a journalist. What else am I thinking? Yeah, I'm just enjoying the season. It's been really good racing so far, I've thought, as a whole. I mean, I know I've said this before, but the competition in all three series is amazing, and we are seeing the best of the best go after it week after week, and I think that's just fun.
It's a great time in the world of NASCAR as Jack Edwards, the Nesson announcer who is going to retire from the Boston Bruins telecast for Nesson after the season. Are you having fun yet? Because that's what I feel like. I'm going to quote what he says. Welcome to the 2024 fun. Are you having fun yet tour of NASCAR Cup racing and truck racing and Xfinity racing? But I know I am. It's a year
Are you
number of
not
cup.
entertained?
Are you not entertained? If you're not, you're probably not a human being or you're ChatGPT. You should be entertained. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's going to be a great stretch coming up in the second quarter of the 2024 NASCAR season. But I do think it's time for us to put a bow on our show. So for Brooklyn Jackson and Eric Jones, I'm your host, Rob Tionson, saying thanks so much for joining us here for the world's fastest hour of racing talk. For our previous 112 episodes, check those out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll see you all next week for our post-Talladega, pre-Dover edition of our show. As I always like to say, let's all go get that checkered flag. Until next time, so long, everyone!